Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is David Williams calling in from Santa Barbara with the fourth episode of this show to explore the idea called the Great Planetary Peace Pilgrimage, to develop this idea as the most popular television show ever, to bring out the message of peace effectively around the world through the genre of motion pictures with popular personalities lending their draw to the show based on the format of a moving stage in the encampment accompanying a long-distance peace walk from place to place around the world, with cameo appearances at the stage each night by popular public personalities to lend their draw to the show, and kitchens with the international cuisine representative multicultural walkers from around the world speaking many languages, demonstrating how to get along in peace by using the peace tools the show will provide, like the peace tents, a human hive system of socialization to learn how to get along quickly, like 100 walkers can in a week pair up in 6 people each night in a shared space, a tent space, and quickly get acquainted with 100 people in a week by that kind of socialization process. The tent system is based on a tetrahedral geometry, a combination of tetrahedrons. The tetrahedral shape is the basic form of our life form. Basic shape of our life form, carbon bond, and the shape as water. So the shape of water is also a tetrahedron. When you sit in the side of the tetrahedron, like a tripod with 3 equal sides and a triangular base, if you sit inside that, you can get a mental orientation to the space. It gives you a mind control peg reference point. If you put 6 of these together and put the poles in a different way, it makes a 2-story structure with the looking down, looks like the Metatron shape, a geometric shape. Okay, so there's a number of peace tools, the red cloth dyeing ceremony, the trumpeting water pipe, just a PVC pipe, blow on it like a trumpet, the rainbow peace braids, 6 colors braiding, 3-strand braiding with 3 pairs of colors, and you braid it from the ends. You tie a knot in the middle of 1 fathom long. That's the length of your reach. And tie a figure 8 knot in the middle, and you braid 3-strand braiding with 3 pairs of colors out to the end, and put another figure 8 knot. And the idea is it's a prayer. You make it with love. It stands for the message of peace. And when everyone has one, we'll have world peace. That's the message of the Rainbow Peace Braid. I've been propagating this since 1977 with little success, but maybe it'll catch on as a fad. So this is a number of peace tools, peace toys I've developed since the idea came to me for this Great Planetary Peace Pilgrimage as the most popular television show ever. When I went In 1978, I initiated a walk, organized walk, by my friend Masal Napashi, a Buddhist monk who came to Santa Barbara. We walked a week, my wife and I, and a bunch of people in the Santa Barbara, I Love Vista community, the Tai Chi Chuan teacher, and a bunch of people walked to Los Angeles to introduce the Hopi interpreter, Thomas Banyaka, to these monks, the disciples of Fuji Guruji, who was Mahatma Gandhi's teacher, from whom Gandhi also took up this drum, looks like a big ping pong paddle that you walk and beat the drum and pray the Namo Myoho Renge Kyo mantra that their teacher said 700 years ago would bring peace to the world in our time, predicted in our time, by simply putting the voice, this mantra. And Nichi Datsu got this vision with the second time he did a week of fasting without food or water or sleep in Japan. He got the vision of using this drum and adding it to the prayer that all the 32 Nichiren sects chant this prayer, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. He added the drum and went to India and began the revival of Buddhism in India, where there's no practitioners but lots of shrines in the 1930s. He didn't speak the language. The children followed him around, and he gradually became popular, loved, and eventually he met Mahatma Gandhi around 1933, and they hit it off. They didn't speak each other's language. Gandhi spinning the spinning wheel to try to kick the British out by self-sufficiency, making cloth on his own. Nichi Datsu beating the drum and chanting during the time of the initial 15 minutes. But they made a connection, and the Gandhi, the spinning wheel, cotton spinning wheel, was replaced by the Buddha Dharma wheel and partially of Guruji's influence. Every day still, a Gandhi ashram in India, they beat the drum and chant Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. So drum in December 1976, after an experience where we went to the Hopi land and learned about the Hopi prophecy and expected the appearance of a helper with a sign of the sun. And Masal Napashi, his name means rainbow warrior. And the book we read about with it, this prophecy, is called Rainbow Warrior. And he explained the purpose of the chanting is of self-purification, to purify the mind, to get the junk out, to get a clear channel to natural intelligence, which brings peace. In respect of this Myoho Renge, Myoho means wonderful law, the law that everything operates by. Later, I learned this in the Santa Barbara at the Tree of Peace. There's another story, 2,200 years ago, the Buddhist monk finally reached the emperor who killed all kinds of people, the Indians of continent, and conquered the whole territory by violent and bloody warfare until he was depressed, I guess, by all the carnage. And at the moment, he finally received the message of peace from the Buddhist monks. Then he built many peace monument poles, stone pillars, Ashoka, the stone pillars of Ashoka and the peace pagodas, the stupas. He built them all over the place to enshrine this teaching represented by Nichiren's Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. That led to 500 years of war, no crime, no violence anywhere in his realm. That was an impressive precedent, because I always thought war was just a part of human nature, but I learned from that example it's not true. Next, I heard from Chief Jake Swamp, the Mohawk chief, at the UCSB Tree of Peace in his ceremony that he did. We planted the Tree of Peace on May 16th, 1985. As a symbol of the great law of peace. And over the years, in the 5 years later, we had a big ceremony with 100 people and called Rainbow Uprising of Consciousness Campaign on YouTube. It's a 2-hour video by that name, with actor John Voight, a Hopi interpreter, Thomas Banyaka, came to these week of events. And he explained the details of the peacemaker story and the great law of peace at that time in 1990. And it's a similar concept to the Myoho, the wonderful law, the great law of peace by which everything operates. And the long story short is, the peacemaker came, brought the teaching and the message of peace, the great law of peace. The five warring tribes, one of which was the cannibals, the Mohawk, accepted the teaching, united in peace, created the Iroquois Confederacy, lasted hundreds of years without war, with prosperity, because of the embracing the great law of peace. So this is the second instance I experienced a historical precedent to bring peace by simply the message of peace being explained and embraced. When the time comes, people embrace the message. And then the Hopi Declaration of Peace by Thomas Banyaka, very powerful document. That's the third symbol on the global peace pole we developed over many years since 1980. And we had a ceremony on the March 11th, 2018, at the UCSB Tree of Peace by Stork Tower there. We had a ceremony conducted by Jose Munoz, the Mayan calendar day keeper, keeping track of 23 different Mayan calendars each day, what's going on, and the cosmic, what this connects to in the cosmic realm, the position of the stars and all that. And he's the keeper of one of the keepers of this sixth sun Mayan calendar that started in 2012 on December 21st. That started a 26,000 year new calendar. The old one ended back then, which Jose Arguelles promoted as a big turning point for 2012 era. And on December 21st. So that's why, but on the previous calendar had 20 archetype symbols, like a astrology symbols kind of thing. And the new calendar has 25 archetype symbols. So in 2015, Jose Arguelles came to speak in Antioch University in Santa Barbara, and he talked about the message of the Mayan Jade Princess. He had Xerox copies of big scrolls of rubbings like from rocks, and he said the part of the message was world peace begins in the year 2021. This message, he said, he was given to release to public the first time ever because a crystal skull he had brought all of a sudden appeared in the middle of it, what looked like a drop of blood, a red spot. And he said his elder told him, now's the time to go and share the message of the Mayan Jade Princess, which part of he didn't explain all of it, but the part of it that resonated with me was that this woman in the year 1444, June 21st, she explained, based on information transmitted back in time from her to her from the year 2029, that world peace begins in the year 2021. He said this 5 years ago to a gathering at Antioch University. I took it seriously because of the fact my experience, my spiritual experience that changed me from being a life insurance salesman into a peace activist crystallized in June 23rd, 1973 when I was driving and heard the clairaudient perception of a sound, Torak, which I can only explain the experience that I was driving and I couldn't dream, I could not daydream about anything except like a switch was turned off on my mind. All I could perceive was the sound, Torak. Torak. It sounded like a giant loudspeaker, but I figured out that it wasn't. Then after a few minutes, like 4 or 5 minutes, the sound was turned off and I could think about it. But, that's my experience that led me to think that's a transmission through time from the future that I picked up, and that's helped me be a guide to manifest things that are going to lead to a condition of paradise on earth. I was meditating, thinking, what happens in the future? Are things going to be all destroyed because of war and that? Or if we have a wonderful future, maybe we've mastered this time travel, information time travel. That's when I got the sound. Later, I realized this near China Lake, where it happened, maybe some technology responsible, but my physics guys suggested. But in May 5th, 1976, that sound manifest when I was putting it to voice came out Torakum, and I figured out from a woman who came to where I was that that is Hebrew, means the law stands up. So that means that Torah couldn't be just out of the blue technology. I heard it because of that, but me must be real because of this connection with the Torah Kum. So since that time, I started thinking maybe I'm supposed to be channeling something. The law arises like Torah, the law, but is the law that even God must follow and cannot contradict in this decisions in the world. Despite what all the scriptures describe about the Torah, that's the principle. I recognize that as the same principle that Einstein tried to make his unified field theory to describe the principle of inviolably sovereign natural law that cannot be contradicted. Like the law of gravity always works. So that's, I equated in my mind this concept of Einstein's unified field theory, the great law of peace, the Hopi Declaration of Peace, the Namo Myoho Renge Kyo description of the wonderful law, that similar concept. And since I was 18 years old and under the tutelage of my friend Jim Waldron, was the first, second person, Anglo-American, who embraced Islam at the Los Angeles mosque meetings. And from his tutelage, I recognized the same thing that Sai Baba says, is that everything that happens, happens in accord with the will of God. So the will of God is this same concept as the Torah by which everything operates. So that's the symbols I've put on this, what's evolved to be the global peace pole for Jerusalem. So the Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, then the Great Law of Peace symbol, then the Hopi Declaration of Peace. Then on March 18th, I had used this three symbol peace pole called the Rainbow Uprising Peace Pole, named after our Rainbow Uprising of Consciousness, the Hopi campaign from 1990, our events there. I used this concept of Rainbow Uprising Peace Pole with the three symbols and took it to Governor Brown in Sacramento and offered it to be put in by the state capitol. And the police came and stole it and kept it. So it didn't work. And so I, over the years, I meditated on it. And after Jose Munoz inspired me, I thought, okay, let's have a ceremony at the Tree of Peace to put additional symbols on this peace pole and embody with it the ceremony, the prayer for peace. And so we did that on March 11, 2018, the seventh anniversary of the Fukushima nuclear disaster. We had a ceremony, a small ceremony, but the wonderful thing is that the mayor of Santa Barbara agreed to participate in the ceremony and come, and she gave a proclamation mayor's proclamation and read it in the ceremony, which was conducted by Jose Munoz and with the Chumash firekeeper Art Cisneros and a woman named Maya Shaw Gale, who's a very prominent grandmother in Santa Barbara, doing the water ceremonies for the water protectors. And a few community leaders, a half dozen or so, I have a picture, took part in the ceremony. And Jose had the Lakota leader from Standing Rock call in and offer his prayer during the time. And all this time, Mayor Kathy Murillo was present at this ceremony, and we were very moved. And I only reflected lately because her tenure as mayor came to an end this last week. And I noticed that, and she was replaced. The new mayor, a man, was elected. And so I reflected on this, that actually she's the first mayor who's come to the prayer at the Tree of Peace, in my knowledge, ever since we planted it in 1985. I've gotten proclamations from several previous mayors, with Harriet Miller and Helene Schneider and Marty Bloom, all gave me a proclamations acknowledging the Tree of Peace and the message of the Great Law of Peace, and acknowledging the Peace Pole for Jerusalem at the and the ceremony we did at UCSB, but none of them came to offer their presence and the prayer. That's what struck me this week as unique, that Mayor Murillo agreed, and she's the one who, a part of the ceremony, she affixed what turned out to be the fourth symbol on the Peace Pole, which is a symbol we developed in 2000, I think it was the year 2001, something like that, Christmas time, a walk I organized from California. The few people walked from Bethlehem to Jerusalem to bring out the teachings of peace, the Jerusalem peacemakers there. And for that occasion, my friends designed a logo, which Sherwood made a logo with Nair's help. It depicts the unity of the three faces of Jerusalem. So it looks like a superimposition of the Star of David and the Christian cross and the Islamic symbol of the partial moon, you know, how it looks, all superimposed on the peace symbol. That's the symbol that Mayor Kathy Murillo agreed and she affixed to the Peace Pole for Jerusalem at the March 11th, 2018 ceremony at the UCSB Tree of Peace. And also we put on there the fifth one would be the symbol for the Sai Baba symbol for the spiritual unity of all religions. Now there's Satya Sai Baba has passed away, but he's a prominent teacher in India, and he had two versions of this symbol, one with five lotus petals and one with six. The one with five I had used on a previous Peace Bowl. The one with the six was given to me for my Elsie Cowan, who started the Tustin bookstore for Sai Baba. And she, when in 1983, she signed a paper logo with a design and said, anybody ask you, this gives you permission to put it on the Peace Bowl. Because there's a controversy at the time, that one of the devotees had asked Baba to create a new symbol for the United States, which included the six-pointed star. So that's one that's on this symbol. But the normal one used all over the world besides in India too doesn't have the six-pointed star, because all the other symbols of the religions and so forth point to have the flame as the symbol. So that's the long story why, but there's a reason why. So that six-pointed star logo looks like a six-petaled lotus with a peace pole in the middle, the lotus stupa that exists in India, the modern version of King Ashoka stupa with the, instead of a lion, triple-headed lion on top, this is a giant stone pillar with a lotus flower and the five symbols of all of the religions represented in symbols at the bottom of the structure, where all the native religions and indigenous traditions and all everything else boils down to the fire symbol in the logo. So anyway, that's the fourth one. And then after we had the ceremony on March 11th, we had lunch and I asked Jose Munoz to pick a symbol to put on the Peace Bowl for Jerusalem, and he picked one of the five new symbols for the archetype symbols for the 26,000-year calendar that started December 21st, 2012, which is a symbol for peace, love, and patience. And it looks kind of like a peace symbol, but doesn't have the middle part going. Looks like a little bit like a Mercedes symbol, but it has a characteristic shape and a Mayan cosmology. It has a Mayan language name, which means peace, love, and patience. So that's the sixth symbol we put on after that day. I had the graphic made and we recreated the six symbols on the Peace Bowl and took it to the East in 2018. After that ceremony, I drove across country on a revival of Napashi's Great Spirit Relay to take to Washington, D.C., put the Peace Bowl opposite the White House, beat the drum and chanted the prayer. And the newspaper guy came and recorded a little video and wrote an article about our attempts to repeat the longest walk in the long walk for survival and the history of it in Greenbelt Park and the gathering we did to take input to create a global peace plan, which was delivered to the White House and to the United Nations, all before coming back by way of Taos, New Mexico, where we left that version of the global peace pole for Jerusalem with the six symbols put on in Santa Barbara. We left it with permission from the Bureau of Land Management installed at the Taos Gorge Bridge, the Rio Grande Eagles, the beginning of the Rio Grande Eagles through Taos, New Mexico, deep gorge, and there's a rest area. Dig a hole and put it in the ground because they said there's any artifacts, don't want to dig it in the ground. So they said you can install a rock pile of rocks to put in, you know, set in a pile of rocks instead of digging in the ground. So we left it in a pile of rocks and within a bucket of rocks. I had to leave in a hurry because Yamato's dragging on. He didn't want to pay attention to what I was doing and wanted me to hang around longer. I had to get back to Jose Munoz's ceremony. So Joe Stoops and I left it and have pictures installed in a pile of rocks. This is the Yamato's completion of 1978. He brought the Peace Bowl ceremony to the Rainbow Gathering, Oregon, where I went to talk about the longest walk. Got 42 people to join the end of the longest walk. I got there at the very end by magic, a plane ticket to walk the last 100 feet with them. And So anyway, the Peace Pole, Yamato, Reverend Yamato, Zen monk, he brought the idea of the Peace Pole to the Rainbow Gathering in 1978. His idea was, unlike the other Japanese monks, Nippon Zen Myohei-ji monks, following Guruji's strictly teaching, Yamato has a different perspective as a Zen monk who's took up the drum and the chanting for his grandmother, who's an associate of Guruji. His idea was to put the Namu Myoho Renge Kyo calligraphy on the Peace Bowl and then invite all the people who wanted to put their sacred symbol of peace to also put it on the Peace Bowl. And then he had ceremony. We would walk through the camps and planted it in the ceremony area at the Rainbow Gathering. And the next one, the same in Arizona, more elaborate, because we walked to the various camps and then planted it at the spot. But he couldn't go in the next year because he was the coordinator for the long walk for survival. And so I went to try to do it and couldn't do it. A Peace Pole tree blew down across from the information center, but the people couldn't get the idea, so we saved it and it disappeared, and we got another one from Greenbelt Park on the long walk for survival led by Chief Crow Dog. Arrived to Washington, D.C. We introduced it in 1980 on the eve of President Reagan's election over Carter. We introduced this blank log to be a peace pole, to stand for the message of peace, and to be put up in the White House someday. That was kept in a prayer vigil for a week or so. Guruji had his monk put the calligraphy on it, the Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. Gradually, over time, more people put symbols, carvings, and that on it. It lasted over 20 years. This Peace Pole went to many, many gatherings, rainbow gatherings, all kinds of gatherings. as a symbol of the message of peace. It's the centerpiece for our 1994 mutual prophecy fulfillment gathering that took place in Arizona at the request of Hopi interpreter Thomas Binyaka, who asked us to bring people to compare spiritual knowledge in the Hopi land to bring out the teaching of peace. Well, I tried for many years. I tried in 1984 to go to the Rainbow Gathering, and I wanted to, had a big proposal to get a caravan to go to Hopi land, connect with the spiritual leaders and all that. But it got hijacked by the communists at the Rainbow Gathering, who wanted to do a political thing to go to the Democratic National Convention and the Republican National Convention. So I went along to pray for peace and brought the Peace Bowl. We put it up in Golden Gate Park for a week, against the rules. We got away with it for peace. Then we went to Dallas to the Republican National Convention. That's when the guy burned the American flag and part of the end of the walk that went to the Supreme Court and said flag burning is free speech. After a year of hearing Texas law trying to fight him on that, and I got pissed off because the CNN news came out with a picture of me beating the drum and chanting close up, and then followed the picture of the guy burning a flag. And I was against that from the get-go. I had all kinds of news media, international media photographers taking a picture of me arguing with the group. When my group came from the river bottom camp to walk with this peace war chest tour that communists called it to protest the war industry, I wanted to just bring peace. My mission is to tell people, don't fight it, don't argue, get in people's face, all that kind of shit. It's not going to solve anything. You have to deal with the respect. You have to talk to people with respect. Otherwise, it's not going to work. They didn't listen. They wanted to burn the flag on the spot when we arrived with it. That's where the confrontation the news media was about. So I said, not going to burn the flag, but I'll compromise and we'll turn it upside down and carry it as an international symbol of distress. So we did that, and it didn't burn it. But at the end, some yahoo burned a flag that went to the court, and then they had the news report. I was associated, so I got mad and tried to figure out a solution. And I found that I learned when I was a child, when your flag wears out, you're supposed to burn it. So I found out in Santa Barbara, the woman who taught the ceremony at the Girl Scout camp, how it works, and you unseam the flag so it's not burned as a whole flag. It's burned as the stripes and the field of stars. And it's like a prayer with you. You see these things as you burn the stripes, and it's like a prayer for America that is a retirement ceremony for a flag. So I started to promote that as a public event to get people together with respect to offer good ideas for America to change what the war things and all that. And the American Legion offered a flag and the color guard, I lit the fire and outside City Hall and De La Guerra Plaza. The media, all the media came. It was, and we did this beautiful ceremony, but there was a picture, but the TV didn't put it on because not enough people were interested to come. So it was really news. It was a ceremony, and I tried a couple of times more. The last time was that the Peace Flame on UCSB campus that we lit in 1990 at the end of the procession from the Peace Tree where the Hiroshima Peace Flame was installed on that Eternal Flame Monument, which has a dedication plaque to Martin Luther King. It's his birthday today. Another one, a quotation from John Kennedy and a quotation from Robert Kennedy, all on this Eternal Flame Monument. So we took a light. The veterans came, the color of God came, all the old people came. Then we burned the flag there at the UCSB when using a light from the Hiroshima Peace Flame as a prayer for peace. And that turned out to be the same August 2nd that surprised Iraq invaded Kuwait. And my life is full of weird coincidences. It's just another one. So anyway, let's see how. I can't tell from I'm online, but I can't tell how many minutes I've used, so I'm gonna keep talking, and eventually the monitor will tell me time is short. But so basically, back to the peace pole, the six symbols didn't work. I took it to the White House. President Trump didn't pay attention. He didn't accept the message of peace. The United Nations didn't pay attention. In spite of the 10-point peace plan we developed in Greenbelt Park, with a few participants locally and online participants, a plan to create global peace, nobody paid attention to it. So I've came back and the COVID thing hit, and well, just put it this way, since 1976, before and I met the woman I married in 1976, and it was Sadie Hawkins Day, the day, election day, the 29th of February, 1976, and we had a powerful connection. I was determined to explore this, whatever Tarak was, to bring peace. I was a mendicant, meaning I didn't have a job. I was just focusing on how could I help create peace. Well, we got hip to the Hopi interpreter, came to town. Thomas Binyaka, and May 28, 1976, we got the Hopi Declaration of Peace. I was blown away by his message about the Hopi prophecy. We know it, the Hopi life plan. And reading this, must have read it 100 times, this Hopi declaration pieces. So moved me the wording, how artfully explain things. And so we took, Carol and I went to the Hopi land. We had a, when Thomas Banyaka spoke, he zapped me. He said, the true white brother has come to the Hopi land very soon, bringing many inventions, and we're wearing a red cloak or hat, something red. When he looked at me in the eyes, when he said that part of the message, I knew that my theory I'd been developing since 1974, this Tetron Natural Unified Theory, Field Theory, which I think is a completion of Einstein's work to describe this natural law and the language of mathematics. I started this work in August of 1974 when I first moved to Santa Barbara to apply for the PhD program in chemical physics, but didn't start it then because my application was denied because I found out later because that's, you just don't turn your application in a $50 fee and they tell you you have to get a sponsor and all, study a bunch of stuff, and then they tell you what to do your thesis on. So I was disappointed, but I accepted it, and I knew I had to learn something to complete these equations. And I knew when I was in the Hopi land in the summer of 1976, that many new inventions were going to come about based on understanding of the mind over matter principle, because this theory of mine, these equations, depict the human mind's consciousness orientation functional light. So I'll shorten this story a little bit, but I was practicing beating the drum and chanting this prayer, and one day walked across town to Isla Vista from Montecito one time and realized that the prayer I learned as a teenager, Nam La Ilaha Illallah, the Muslim prayer, meaning there's no God but the one God, had the same cadence and beat and the second beat as the Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. And I was curious about that. So one time I put the voice all the way beating the drum, Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. One time I put the voice, La Ilaha Illallah, when I was walking and had a big revelation. All I can say is I got the inspiration for the fourth and final equation of my Tetron Natural Unified Theory, Field Theory, which has to do with the absolute identity function. It's a newly created function, mathematical function, like the equals sign, equals function is two lines, x equals y, and then there's three lines you use in math, means that is defined identically equal to the three lines up here, and the first three equations of my Tetron Natural Unified Field Theory. But I didn't get the realization of the oneness principle, the unity behind everything, until that day. And April 28th, 1977, which I found out later, coincidentally, is the anniversary of the date that Saint Nichiren first put to voice the Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, with a prediction in the future. Everybody puts that to voice, it'll bring peace. That's also a fulfillment of the Lotus Sutra prophecy from 2,500 years ago, where the prophecies every 5 year, each 500 year period has a theme meaning, and the last, which we have finished that 2,500 years, and Fuji Guruji recognized the atomic bombing fulfilled the turning point, the conflagration which is burning, it talks about in the Lotus Sutra, means this is the beginning of a time of the perfect law, the acceptance of the perfect law. Before that was age of the declined law. So all these things add up to now in the future, people are going to come to recognize the operation of this, whatever you call it, the natural law, the Torah, the will of God, the Myoho, the great law of peace. That's all various names for the same principle, that there's a law, a principle, but it's inviolably sovereign. It cannot be changed. Always works. Karma, gravity work, always works. If you throw a rock up, might hit you on the head. That's an example of how this law works. But the societies are all around the world messed up, fighting war, crime, because of the fact they don't embrace, understand this law, which a part of it is the nature of truth, obviously, because most of people around the world think that the truth is a made-up thing that you get people to believe in, and that makes it true. They don't recognize the absolute nature of truth. This is my bone to pick with science. When I was a chemistry major at Cal State University at Northridge, honors graduate, all A's in my chemistry classes, good grades in math and all that stuff. But I peeked behind the curtain, behind the see the Wizard of Oz. In my graduate level course, I had to take an elective. And I elected to take the class that everybody hated, modern physical chemistry, to see what they would say. This is a graduate level course. The undergraduates didn't get it. So as a peek behind the curtain, the same teacher, I got an A, the only A he'd given at my university, my quantitative analysis years earlier. So he knew that I knew I was an expert in chemistry. But the thing is, he started off the class, that class, saying, okay, what we've taught to you about so far all these years in chemistry isn't true. And we were shocked. What do you mean? He says, we gave you models of what we think is true and successive models to refine how we think things work. but he says because of Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, we're convinced, science is convinced, we cannot know the truth ever with 100% certainty. All we can do is figure out higher and higher probabilities that something is true. So right then, he knocked me out of the saddle because I always thought science believed in the absolute nature of truth, but he convinced me in the course, all kinds of gobbledygook of probability distributions, Boltzmann's equations, whatnot, trying to figure out probabilities, this, that, and the other. And he started off saying, but I'm going to teach you stuff that somebody yours doesn't make any sense. If you believe in the truth, disregard what I'm saying. So I didn't get a good grade in that class, and I went to the life insurance business instead because I came out of my shell, and long story, but I wanted to get married and fell in love with a woman, and I couldn't because I wanted to be a scientist, but then she went away for the summer, and I got this job from my dad's friend and learned how to come out of my shell, not be a bookworm, and talk to people and learn the script and the principles, and became successful in selling life insurance. That's part of my transition. So I went through all that to explain the tetron theory, my tetron symbol. I put it on top of the peace pole. So there's seven symbols. Each of those symbols reinforce the other. The foundation is this law of time, more or less, the cosmic calendar of time from the Mayan. And if you go up from there, the up is the symbols going up is peace, love, and patience, the Mayan calendar symbol, the spiritual unity of all faiths, and then comes this the spiritual unity of uniting the three faiths of Jerusalem in peace, and then the Hopi declaration of peace, then the great law of peace, and the Namu Myoho Renge-kyo calligraphy message of St. Nichiren. Each symbol represents a teaching to cause peace. Then the top symbol, we put the tetron, which looks like a circle with a triangle and a dot in the middle. That was put on Gandhi's birthday last year, installed by the Chumash elder Arsis Neros in Santa Barbara. And that completes what I think of the seven symbols of the global peace pole for Jerusalem. When each of these symbols is understood, that's going to end war and violence around the world. So all we have to do is propagate the messages behind it to get the understanding, and we're going to end war and violence forever, just like Guruji said we would. Longest walk speech he gave at the Capitol steps and the end of the longest walk on July 16th, the third anniversary of the first atomic bomb, the day that he spoke and delivered this message on the steps of the Capitol, where from the moment he started speaking in Japanese to the moment his translator finished the last part of his speech, thunder was rolling around the city of Washington, D.C. I paid attention to it and never stopped, never happened before or after. All during that time he spoke, it happened. A sign from nature. You read this speech, Guruji's Longest Walk speech, the Buddhist teacher, first time I read a Buddhist teacher talking about the nature of God, he discusses this. Very powerful message. The essence of it is he says that the Native American traditions, the Native American spirituality is going to be the faith of the Native Americans is going to be the fountainhead for peace in the future. Means he recognized the Native Americans have the something going on in the understanding of reality that they would be a fountainhead, the source of peace in the future. I'm sure it's partly because we need to recognize as a people the righteousness of the Native American cause, that how badly they've been screwed over by the predominant Anglo culture, and how it's never been acknowledged, just like the atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki were a tremendous war crime that's never been acknowledged. The people pussyfoot around it. Oh, we had a bomber because of blah, blah, blah. But they don't understand the United Nations Charter was signed on June 26, 1945, when all the nations agreed to ban the weapons of mass destruction. They agreed to end the use of those weapons in war. Then in July 16th, less than a few weeks later, the first atomic bomb was tested. And then a couple of weeks later, in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the first deliberate use of nuclear weapons in violation of the Charter of the United Nations took place. So that's why Guruji said in this speech, the United Nations is a violator of its own charter of the United Nations because of these atomic bombings. And that drove the people into ratifying the United Nations Charter in the October of 1945, from June to October. Now, interestingly, that the time frame is it was until August that the Japanese were still fighting in World War II. So the United Nations Charter was signed before Japan surrendered. So overall, it looks like the United Nations was created by the fear of the atomic destruction, the atomic bombs didn't have to be dropped on Japan, but Russia was going to invade Japan, so it was done to stop Russia, to prevent Japan from being a Russian possession after the war. So bottom line is, Guruji was righteously upset that the atomic bombings of Japan occurred in violation of all kinds of moral codes besides the charter. And he sympathized with the American Indian people because of the atrocious treatment by the government. And he supported the longest walk and all the native people's walks since then. And the native people have always enjoyed the spiritual support of Guruji and his followers since they were introduced. We went in January 1977 to Santa Barbara with the Chumash elder, spiritual leader, Kot Law Ta, conducting the morning fire ceremony. That we walked with the Nepashi and to introduce the Japanese monks to the Hopi interpreter. And since then, all this is mushroomed. The monks went to meet Dennis Banks later in Northern California, and they connected with him. And he also took the drum and the prayer, and was responsible big time for the longest walk and many walks since, and the spiritual runs and all this kind of stuff. But all of it happened before the end of 1976, because at that time, Guruji was under the impression all the Indians were dead. They all were killed off in the United States until his monks found out they were still surviving, and he looked deeply into it, visited it. Eventually, in his 90s, he visited these leaders and so forth and realized the depth of their culture and the depth of their understanding. That's why at the longest walk he said, it's going to be the Native people's faith, religious faith of the Native American people, that's going to bring peace, that's going to guide peace in the future. That's what I've been following as a lay disciple of Fuji Guruji all these years. That's what I believe. That's why I put my energy behind trying to transmute, more or less, the symbol of the peace tree, the tree of peace, embody in this global peace pole for Jerusalem. Then I have to repeat some stories in this episode to tie it together, because in 1994, we had a mutual prophecy fulfillment gathering that was inspired by Thomas Banyaka. And when he came in 1990 and gave his talks for the Rainbow Uprising campaign in Santa Barbara, one of the things he said during this time was the time the Berlin Wall was falling down. And he said the Berlin Wall for us, for the Native American people, can be symbolized by the five strands of barbed wire that go between the Hopi and the Navajo reservations that have separated traditional allies and friends and fomented lots of trouble. he said, we should come over here and tear that American Berlin Wall down, that five strands of barbed wire. So being the kind of guy I am, I heard that message. And then after that, within a couple of years, I went to the Arizona to find that five strands of barbed wire. And there I met a couple of guys in Flagstaff, peace activists, and they went, guided me to the place where we went out in the desert and cut a length of five strands of barbed wire between the posts, cut it down, and stole the barbed wire to symbolize taking the American Berlin Wall down. One of my friends took some barbed wire and a piece of that mounted it and was going to give it to Thomas and didn't think it happened. But out of that came me delivering this message. Out of that came the organizing over 3 years of a mutual prophecy fulfillment gathering in the targeted in the Hopi area. It was organized by a main guy in Flagstaff who tried to make a music event combined with a gathering on the land. All kinds of problems happened with money, and he wound up getting a bad name, but we went to Big Mountain to start and to try to figure out where we could create this gathering. And so I was at Big Mountain we were there for less than a week by about that time. And a lot of Rainbow family folks. And I had the only cell phone, the primitive old cell phone. The grandmothers would come up, the Big Mountain grandmothers would come up and ask me to borrow the cell phone. So they were calling all over to get support. Then eventually where our colleagues found the place, we started setting up a kitchen, and everybody moved from Big Mountain to Kendrick Mountain area, and this kitchen was set up, and where drums around the world happened. A lot of Native people, Supai and Hopi and Lakota, all came to gather and exchange knowledge. And we had a number of ceremonies during the week. And the thing is, the coincidence was the gathering had been planned for 3 years over the theme of mutual prophecy fulfillment. And by coincidence, the first day we gathered, when we moved on land, was August 20th, 1994, which was the birthday of the white buffalo calf named Miracle that was born in apparent fulfillment of the ancient Lakota prophecy or promise by the white buffalo calf type woman that from 19 generations ago when this mystical being delivered the original sacred pipe and the 7 days of teachings behind the pipe and the seven rites to be followed. She delivered these teachings, which have been memorized and delivered every year from memory for 19 generations about the details of these teachings of the sacred pipe. This is the kind of stuff that Guruji was talking about, the spiritual faith, the religious faith of the Native American people, one of which the seven rites is a Sundance prayer ceremony, which is outlawed for 80-something years until the Longest Walk changed the law. Now that's building up spiritually, happening all more and more. But the promise of the Buffalo Calf Pipe Woman was when she left, I'll tell you a little bit about it, because people are amazed at the teachings of Jesus Christ, as I am amazed, because of a lot of miracles things happened, raising people from dead, creating water from wine and all that. Well, I'm here to tell you today that that's not the only miracles things that happened spiritually over the centuries most people don't know. Sai Baba's a whole episode in the story about materialization of direct materialization of objects, which I witnessed personally in India. But that's the story of the White Buffalo Calf Pipe Woman is analogous to the story of the Peacemaker who brought the great love peace. Analogous. I'll explain. Our gathering on August 20th, 1994 began on the day of the birth of the Buffalo Calf Pipe, White Buffalo, a non-albino white buffalo, which is very rare, about 1 in a million, according to Chief Phil Lane, who conducted the August 28th pipe ceremony at our August 28th, 1994 mutual prophecy fulfillment gathering with thousands of people around the peace pole we created in 1980 for the White House, centered this ceremony. Chief Phil Lane conducted this ceremony, the pipe ceremony, that with the altar at my feet, was with my wearing the red lab coat, dyed in red, and because of the signs I got from Bunyaka 1976. But August 20th, the white buffalo was born, and Chief Phil Lane says, 1 in a million are normally born albino white buffaloes, and they're nearsighted and they're protected by the herd and all that. He has a story of his ancestors fulfilling a prophecy of about the killing of one of those albino white buffaloes. But this one was non-albino, so it had black hooves, black eyes, black horns, but white fur. And the White Buffalo Calf Pipe Woman appeared as a white buffalo calf to two hunters. When they approached her, she turned into a beautiful woman with carrying a bundle, which turned out to have the sacred pipe in it. They're called a white buffalo calf pipe. She told them, "Take me to your leader," kind of thing. They took her to the leaders, And for 7 days, she delivered the teachings of the sacred pipe, how to use it, how to pray, all this stuff. And then after that, they memorized its instructions and handed down from generations. Then after that, she said, I'm going to leave, and someday I will return as a sign of hope for the people. Then as she walked away, she turned into a white buffalo again. But it changed colors through the, as she walked away, that changed colors from the white to gray to black to red, all the sacred colors. The, what happened with this miracle, this white buffalo that was born on August 20th, as she grew in age, she changed into the same colors. When she was born, there was a group of people in Louisiana who were praying for her return. At the same time, had made the prayer with the same time frame when she was born, unknown to us. The mayor there gave a proclamation acknowledging that. That's what happened the first day of our mutual prophecy fulfillment gathering. On the seventh day, we had a walk procession walking through the camps for the introduce the peace pole for Jerusalem. See, we created the peace pole for the White House, hoping it would be accepted and put in the White House in 1980. But 1994, it was, I felt was, we needed something more. So friends of mine in Santa Barbara, to the Wilcox property, the Douglas Family Preserve, we cut down a dead tree and made it a peace pole. And I had it in Santa Barbara, this 1993. We used it in Santa Barbara, displayed it, and tried to, with the plan to take it to this mutual prophecy fulfillment gathering, so drums around the world, and take it there, which we did. And the process, by 1994, your Reverend Yamato convinced me to join him. I gave up my job again to join him to carry the 50th anniversary Global Peace Walk across country to bring out attention to the United Nations Charter and how it was not fulfilled yet to remove the scourge of war from the future generations. So we took this peaceful blank log to the mutual, to drums around the world gathering to introduce it with a prayer someday to go to Jerusalem to bring peace by the symbols, the message that we'd be carrying. So we took this blank log and made a procession through the camps, maybe 100 people, and beating the drums and chanting. And each time we'd stop, and the MC would say a few words at the camp, asking them to add their prayers to the success of the mission to take the peace pole to Jerusalem. Then the next to the last camp was the Hare Krishna. Then everybody sang Hare Krishna. Then it started to rain. And the last camp, we rushed into the tent under heavy rain, was the Jesus tent, a big white tent. The guys dragged a cross around Flagstaff. There's a symbol of their Christian faith. So we go into this tent and explain with where our last stop, the prayer for peace, for the peaceful, for Jerusalem. We want you to add your prayer to bring it to Jerusalem, to bring peace someday. So they're all into it, four of them. We gather in this huge tent and settle down. The four of them were sitting on the heels, cradling this blank log around. Between them, I'm standing next to them. The MC says, trying to figure out what to say, right? Tuzi, popular musician from the Rainbow Gatherings, he's the MC. He says, you know, I was raised a Christian, and I think that Jesus was the original rebel. He starts off saying, and as he says the last words, he points his finger to the sky, and his voice trails off, because instantly the same motion, he's moving his hand to the sky. Giant clap of thunder occurs, where lightning instantaneously blew out a tree next to the tent, we learn later. We were all speechless for minutes. Nobody could talk. It was one of those kind of coincidences. You know something's behind it. The Jesus guys, they looked all had tears coming up down their faces. So we collected ourselves and said a prayer and walked on to the main ceremony and left that peaceful to be consecrated and have a carving put on it, these Mayan faces. There were four faces facing to the four directions that shared four eyes that were knots of the wood that blended into the wood. Amazing carving. That peace pole and the original have since disappeared, rotted out, been lost, burned up. So I created this another peace pole, or Rainbow Uprising peace pole, years ago, because people started thinking the power of the peace pole was in the prettiness of the art object. They weren't paying attention to the symbols, as if the symbols constitute the message of the direction of peace. So that's why I developed those three symbols of the Rainbow Uprising peace pole, and later after March 11th, with Mayor Murillo's involvement, we had named the Global Peace Pole for Jerusalem. And then the last symbol, the Tetron symbol, put on last October to complete this prediction of the beginning of world peace in 2021. It's just a marker beginning. It's what happened the last years leading up to October 2nd, Gandhi's birthday in Isla Vista, and the stage, Lucidity Festival stage, when we put when Art Cisneros burned the sage and consecrated this global peace pole for Jerusalem with the seven symbols, with the Tetron symbol at the top. And so after that, what it takes is people studying the message and learning the message. The people is gonna do nothing. It's just a piece of wood with some symbols, but the message behind it is gonna bring peace and gonna be end of violence and warfare, just like Guruji predicted, just like he said in the Longest Walk speech. So I wanted to tell you a bit about the Peacemaker, the story I learned from Jake Swamp about the Peacemaker. You already can appreciate the story of the Buffalo Calf Pipe Woman, that, you know, how her prediction came true on August 20th. Many white animals and white buffaloes and all kinds of white animals have been born since then, strangely. But that first one, non-albino on August 20th, was the parent fulfillment of the promise. It's hard to deal with the word prophecy because it implies something mystical and mysterious and all that, like the concept of Hopi prophecy that Thomas Banyaka promoted uniquely in English. He's the originator of the term Hopi prophecy. Everywhere you see Hopi prophecy, it's because Thomas Banyaka named it that. But since 1948, he's among the four messengers, the only one authorized by his clan, the Kayoyi clan, to be the messenger to bring out these messages. And he put it in English. What's generally known to the Hopi is the Hopi life plan. He interpreted it to mean Hopi prophecy, to capture the imagination of the Anglo-Christian, Judeo-Christian world. But it means more than prophecy. Life plan means more than prophecy. The Hopi life plan is distinctly different. It's depicted in the chronology of all the Hopi Kachina dances, how it works, how the clowns, the characters called the clowns and the Kachina dances, how they act out as a human beings, representing human beings who are out of harmony with nature, who create problems and all kinds of chaos. They behave that way in the dances. And then at the end of the dance, they're attacked by Kachinas called the invaders, who conduct a purification ceremony and wash off all the mud from the clowns to purify their thinking, to make them pure human beings again, to go on to be good people after that. This explained to me by the Hopi Coyote clan leader in Hotavilla in 2018, when I witnessed the whole Kachina, all dances, all from beginning to end. And he explained these things to me, how the Hopi life plan is represented in the Kachina dances, and how the Hopi life plan is interpreted by Thomas Banyaka and others of the Hopi elders, is interpreting predictions, blah, blah, all this kind of stuff. Like when Thomas Bignacca got to finally speak to the United Nations in December 10th, 1992, he spoke like Saint Nazarian spoke 700 years ago, saying, "You folks are out of harmony with the natural order. You're making up laws, enforcing them by violence. Like you're making up a law against gravity and trying to enforce it," that kind of thing. And it's going to create problems, not only wars and all kinds of, but the mind of man is so connected to the natural world, you're going to create more natural disasters by your thinking out of harmony with nature. Sure enough, as he's talking, the worst rainstorm in New York history brews. By the time the next morning, the 82 elders gathered in a circle to have a ceremony before they went home, the basement was flooded. The lights went out, short circuit. They had to do this ceremony by Bic lighters until before they finished their circle, lights came back on, the storm subsided, and the prayer was finished, and the elders went home. That happened. It's all documented. You can say it's a coincidence, but that's how the natural world works. The coincidence is real. It doesn't mean accident. God, if it happens, it's God's will. It's not an accident kind of thing. So I digress about Thomas, but talking about the power of the natural world and the people who understand it. And I want to include before I finish, it looks like I have 15 minutes. I want to talk about the peacemaker who brought the great love peace. This story is from Jake Swamp, the Mohawk leader, about 1,000 years ago. Earlier I explained how he came to visit first with the Mohawk people, and they accepted the teachings of the Great Law of Peace and helped him to bring it to the other five warring tribes, which then renounced violence and led to a period of hundreds of years of peace and prosperity among many nations that joined this confederacy up and down the east coast of the United States and Canada. And the symbol of the Great Law of Peace, the Wampum Bell teachings, and so forth. But the peacemaker himself is a character analogous to the White Buffalo Calf Pipe Woman, I said, and analogous to the story of Jesus Christ attributed to virgin birth and so forth. But the peacemaker was a man, a child who was born to mother was a virgin. The mother of the grandmother of the peacemaker was ashamed because her mother had become pregnant and insisted she had not relations with a man, and the mother didn't believe her. And so when the child was born, the grandmother tried to destroy the child for shame. She tried three times to kill the child. Each time she did, she took the child somewhere and thought she had done something to cause the baby's death. And when she got back, the baby was with her mother again. The third time she took chopped a hole in ice and dumped the baby in the cold water, left it to flow with the river. And when she got back, the baby was in his mother's arms again. So the grandmother gave up killing the baby, and that this being grew up to be the what they call a peacemaker. There's a name you can read, the chief said you're not ever supposed to pronounce his name, because at some point in the future, the leaders who understand this are going to go out in the forest and they're going to pronounce this name in their language of a peacemaker. And when that happens, he's going to materialize to them in the flesh, and they're going to see him. This is the character of the peacemaker who's, again, the stories about him are memorized and repeated from generations to generations around the sacred fire, council fire, still burning for 1,000 years in the Iroquois Confederacy, still burning this flame that they carried out the light to the Chumash people, and they're holding it at San Ynez, the sacred flame of burning 1,000 years, which I want to see installed in the here at the Peace Flame Monument on campus to bring this completion, the ceremony and the message of peace. Someday I want to see that, but once the people's respect and understanding increases and Chancellor stops turning off the flame, which they did for COVID, and it's back on. So anyway, I wanted to make that comment about mystical nature of the peacemaker. And I'll add in my comments, which I made yesterday to my son, who's identified as a Christian, Micah. He was born in 1979 in Santa Barbara. My wife Carolyn and I conceived him during the time of our work with the homeless in Santa Barbara. We had an apartment on Trigger Road with a second time an apartment place for a couple of months, where we beat the drum and chanted the prayer every morning and gave food to the homeless and this kind of thing. That's the energy, the prayer that Michael was conceived by, and that he has agreed to take the lead for our peace walk that we're initiating now from Santa Barbara. We're going to walk to the White House, and a whole schedule I've outlined before to the Lucidity Festival in Santa Barbara for Buddha's birthday, April 8th, to the Global Peace Walk from Taos, New Mexico, to the Indian boarding school, get the report, New Mexico, Santa Fe Indian boarding school, a report from the Secretary of Interior due April 1st about the deaths in the Indian boarding school, like they're digging up all these bodies in Canada. And then the Rainbow Gathering, the 50th annual Rainbow Gathering in Colorado. Go to Crow Dog's Sundance area in Rosebud, where they brought some of these bodies from the Carlisle Indian School to reinter them sacred the way the children did dead children, and then to the Oklahoma, to the monument built in Santa Barbara by Francis Jansen called the Transformation Through she made one with marble called the Transformation for Forgiveness, which destroyed by the mudslide January 8, 2018, crumbled up and destroyed by the mudslide, but she made a duplicate out of bronze called a Monument to Forgiveness, which is standing on a turtle, and in looks like an Indian guy, which morphs at the top an eagle, location of the end of the Trail of Tears in Oklahoma. So we're going to walk from there to the White House, reverse the Trail of Tears is a principle. So this is a proposal. Everything I've said is not going to happen unless people support it. But my proposal, based my 40 years experience, peace walks and putting two and two together and quince and blending in some coincidences to see how we can create world peace. I'd like to see Mayor Kathy Murillo go to Jerusalem to visit Hajj Ibrahim and his house, his peace house, where he welcomes everybody for peace in East Jerusalem with the Jerusalem peacemakers, Eliyahu McLean, all of Jerusalem peacemakers, Christians, Muslims, Jews, who do ceremonies in Jerusalem to reconcile all the faiths. I would love to see Kathy Murillo go to Hajj Ibrahim's house and have dinner and bring the peace pole for Jerusalem. You can print the graphics and take them in this suitcase and stick them on a pole and put it up at the end. You don't have to carry a big peace pole. That's the idea, to bring the teaching as a representative of these symbols, the messages, peace, to deliver it to Jerusalem. And I believe Kathy Murillo is a wonderful lady who can do this. And she's capable, and because she was spiritually united with this purpose at the Tree of Peace in Santa Barbara and put the symbol on the peace pole, she's the ideal candidate. So anyone who hears this message, please propagate the idea to support our ex-mayor, our 50th mayor, to go to Jerusalem to deliver the global peace for Jerusalem and the message to propagate all around the world from this journey to visit Hajj Ibrahim, the Muslim Gandhi of Jerusalem, I call him. He's a beautiful man. And so looks like I might have 6 minutes left. Okay, so I touched on the mystical nature of the peacemaker, how he's born, and how when he met the Mohawk people, they refused to talk to him. They said, "We want to kill you or test you before we listen to you." So they said, "Okay." And there was a big tree growing horizontally over a canyon, a big canyon. So he had his test was he climbed out to the end of this big tree hanging over the canyon, and they chopped the tree down, and he fell thousands of feet to supposedly his death over the canyon. And they watched it, and the Mohawk people figured, okay, if he passes his test, we'll listen to him. So the next morning, they see a strange smoke, and they go and look, and it's a peacemaker with a fire making his breakfast. And then, what? How did you survive? So that's what started it. He was able to talk to them and convince them about the message of peace and accept the great law of peace. Another story was when he went to the area, he made a white stone canoe. Well, these days with ferrocement cement and all that, we know that you can make a boat out of cement. But at that time, everybody thought he was crazy to carve a white stone canoe. They thought he was nuts. But when it was finished, he put it in the water and it paddled away, and he went across the lakes to the land of the Mohawk. It worked, the symbol of the white stone canoe. Metaphor, think about it. Okay, so what can I say in these remaining minutes? On the first episode of this show, I talked about my faith in Jesus Christ and the things that led me to believe since my marriage ceremony before then for years, on my 33rd birthday, and 1978, May 17th, the ceremony, my marriage ceremony to commit to the kingdom of Jerusalem, Israel. I believe that I should empower this concept by being a surrogate king of Jerusalem, Israel, in the place of Jesus Christ until his return, which may be due partly to the spiritual connection, the mind over matter connection of some individual who will first touch him when he changes to present time existence, which may be me, and has reinforced something, my visit to Sai Baba with his touch on my finger was struck me as a fulfillment of this belief. But I don't know. All I know is I am stepping forward as the surrogate king of Jerusalem, Israel, for the return of the love of Jesus Christ and the physical return of Jesus Christ. That's why I said that. The first episode, second episode, I talked more about the process, the details of the walk, and why its purpose is to get Leonard Peltier out of jail as the American Indian Movement last prisoner of war, fabricated evidence by the FBI. We have to destroy the FBI's credibility and bring Leonard home in peace. Namu myoho inge kyo torakum torak tuak torakum.
But, yes, all good. What was like the general message you shared?
Well, the unique message I shared was about the details of, I told you about Kathy and Muriel and
I won't hear it.
I told you about Kathy and Muriel and the ceremony so I made a big point at the end of it to ask people to support Kathy and Maria to go to Jerusalem to carry a message of global peace call for Jerusalem, since he was the one that put that symbol on the pole. And on May 11th, the guy, he needs the people in Israel are waiting for somebody to come with this message. And the guy, Abraham, has a peace out. He welcomes everybody to come and I call him the Muslim Gandhi of the Jerusalem. He works with Eliyahu McLean, the Jewish guy with the Jerusalem peacemakers. All these guys, the Christian Muslims, Jews, who think alike for peace, work together as the Jerusalem peacemakers. They're the ones that my friends designed the logo that we used in 2001 when my organization Tehachapi there walked from Bethlehem to Jerusalem at Christmas 2001. These guys. So Ibrahim's still hanging in there. He's old and rickety, and his grandfather lived to 134. But he's not been doing so well with diet and shit. But he's hanging there. So I asked Kathy Muriel to go to take the peaceful message there. So that's kind of unique thing.
Sounds like a peaceful community. That's best
to say
about it.
Yeah, I guess as much as we can be with there all kinds of stuff going on, you know, off and on, rockets and stuff.
Well, that is not peaceful. Yeah.
That's why
it's a pro-Muslim, anti-Israel insurrection that I can never play. I mean, I don't.
But
I can never justify that, but I can wait. You got to wait. What's worse in our society than it is that's exactly who it's like the worst, most disregarded, unsuspected guy in the world. And many of them now the rest is dictated by the PLA and
well,
I have zero sympathy
for anything. So my message.
And I'm sorry, can I just finish?
Yeah.
10 more seconds. I think every single one who is in that group is a member of PLA, whether they want it or not, and therefore death store blame Israel for everything. Kill Israel or nothing.
Sure.
Thank you for listening. Appreciate the help. So, yeah, that's my opinion. Yeah.
Well, I my position is constantly my position with the Muslim Islam people is to learn from the history example of the ride into Mecca, and the bottom line is put down the sword and take up the drum. Because how that happened was the calendar, the Islamic calendar begins with the day Muhammad and his people rose in the Mecca. And part of the story is how it is that they expected to kill a lot of people, to fight a lot of people and make Mecca into a bloodbath. That's what they fully expected. But what happened was they were up all night in the hills surrounding Mecca, beating the drum and chanting the prayers of La ilaha illallah. Then when they rode into town with the swords drawn, nobody fought. Not a drop of blood was shed.
What was that to be called?
The ride into Mecca. The first day of the Islamic calendar is marked with this day.
And Christians ran into town?
Christians weren't involved.
Allah or Muhammad or
this was a conflict about the supremacy of the one God and kicking out the idols of people who didn't want to worship the one God and want to make troubles with all the different gods in the head, was to unify the belief of the people behind the one God. That's what it was all about. And it built up, and the threat of violence was you either accept the one God or you die. That's what he wrote in town about. And nobody fought. Everybody accepted the one God. Then that's the beginning of the Islamic calendar. And everything went downhill from there, or uphill, whatever you want to look at it. But the point is that it was the people mistake that it was the fear of the sword when it was the power of the prayer. The drum and the prayer was the power that conquered Mecca, not the fear of the sword. That's my message.
Well, I disagree with that. I can't stop that. I think it's totally false. I think probably 60 to 70% of what Muhammad did was evil. Just like pure street hot dogs.
I don't know.
And the main part.
You said a bunch of points. Yeah, but I don't want to know where you get this in my
You don't want to hear my sentence.
Okay, I do. But I want to know where you get the emotions.
Cut me off. What is it? What?
Tell me again.
No, it's very more important for you. Stop. So go ahead.
No, I want to know what you're saying, but you're saying the same things I question with where this, why you believe this, what information are you base this opinion on? That's why I
am. Bottom one is the Bible. I believe in the Bible. As how he has described like future messages and how to interpret them. That's what makes me totally described.
Okay, but certainly Jesus never named Muhammad by name because
he's a fucking agent, Satan. That's why. That I have no doubt. Allah is a synonym for Satan, and Muhammad is the messenger. That's my faith. Don't get me wrong.
I'd
be totally tortured for that, but that's what I believe.
Okay, you believe the Jews believe in one God?
Yes.
One God? But
it's not a matter of belief, it's a matter of truth. Yes, I do.
Yeah. So
just like I believe the truth is the majority of Christians believe in Christ having died as a Jew, risen by God, because he is God, as an atonement of our sins. So it's not
So you don't think that the God of the same is the same?
No.
God
yeah,
is
the
My phone's fully charged. It's like probably 100%. So I can go back and get it.
Thank you. brand new paper bag to sell out.
What was it? It was in a paper bag. How about that?
If you want, I can send you the link to, if you want to listen to the, my rap.
I would.
I got 8 hours under the belt today. Almost 8 hours. Stay there. I'm proud of that. Yeah, I don't know if anybody listens.
Well, yeah. If you start that, we just get content out there.
If you listen, maybe you can notes anyway. And, I don't, or discuss things that I say. I realize one thing I forgot to say, but when I was talking to the Hopi Kachina dances, I forgot to include the concept of forgiveness. The Hopi Kachina dance. Maybe you never saw it.
Well, I don't know if I did or not. Familiar generally with
the telling the story and the principle is that in the end there's this character called the clown.
Clown. Like clowns?
Clown.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah.
They're made up and
caricatures. You have black and white stripes on them.
And they're necklaces.
Yeah, and their faces are covered with mud, and bodies covered with mud. And they do antics during the kitchen. And all I knew before was the man that portrayed the clowns had to be the most experienced Kachina dancers, because part of our duties is to keep track of all the dancers. The guy's foxtail belt is coming loose to fix it.
Oh, really? The name?
So they watch out for the dancers to care take the dancers. The antics, I was told by the guy who knows this, is to symbolize the behavior of human beings out of harmony with nature. It causes them to behave that same bizarre way. So what happened is, I never watched the whole Kachina dance, but I did when I went to my friend, the Hopi Hotepella. I watched him. He explained it, what happened. The very end of the Kachina dance is the Kachinas called the invaders. They show up and they attack the clown. And they chastise the clowns. They whip them. And they pour water on them as a symbol of purification to wash all the mud off them. And then they forgive them. That's the part I left out. They forgive them for messing up, and they go. The idea is that, okay, now you go forward as pure from human being. You're purified from being a clown. That's what we made a joke about the clown being a lighthouse and all that stuff over the years. But so somehow the principle of the Hopi life plan is embodied in the chronology of the Kachina dances. with these principles who I described shortly. He's talking because the Hopi prophecy, so-called Hopi prophecy, one of the things I talked about today was that Thomas Bagnacca invented the whole term of Hopi prophecy, and properly it's called the Hopi lifespan, and he made up the word prophecy, and everywhere you talk about the Hopi prophecy, it's because you have. But it's not mean prophecy, it means the Hopi life plan. That's the way his son explained to me when I visited, and what he's bringing out. But his son is not the messenger clan.
And then there's a path of sight that's made local for their Christian kin who believe in whatever they want. So they believe they keep faith alive, and they keep those, whether it's Christian or whatever. It's a really good book. I think it's a flawless book. Realize power sucks. Nobody said that. But I would recommend Animal Farm. Both were college assignments. They both fucking easy. Animal Farm is a lot easier, quick,
question, what if? Well, what if this happens? What if? What would this look like? I think that's really actually important for you. I don't know that.
Mm-hmm.